Hello, I'm Paul Silverman. This is number 0552, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0552. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Tim Winders, host of the Seek, Go, Create podcast, who, along with his wife, lives in an RV.
I'm actually a business coach. I coach and help leaders and business owners and also people that are heads of ministries, and we help them grow and help them prosper in all that they're doing. So I actually do my business coaching from my RV and travel, and so that is actually my line of work, my business, my profession.
Kelly Brackenhoff, author of the children's book Nevermind, which features a dog that can't hear.
Nevermind, featuring Duke the deaf dog. It's called Nevermind because everyone in Duke's family can hear except him, and sometimes people tell him Nevermind, which he does not like.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and this time Book Banter is given the whole poop and nothing but the poop with The Poop Diaries. It's actually about plumbers. So get that Roto-Rooter ready as we're about to unclog some drains later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0552, was comedian Paul Silverman, who is also the creator of the original game show called Pun Intended, which is being rebooted in mid-spring. Paul is the prince of puns, the wizard of wordplay, and you can find the link to his Facebook page for Pun Intended by following the link on the show for this number, which you just heard Paul say. See how it all goes full circle? Thank you very much, Paul, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, the world is going a bit mad thanks to the coronavirus threat. It brings out, well, something in people. For instance, a man in Vilnius, Lithuania, with help from his sons, reportedly locked his wife in their bathroom after she expressed worry to him that she had contracted COVID-19 from traveling in Italy, where she came in contact with some Chinese people. The husband called a doctor who suggested she isolate herself. She contacted police because her husband wouldn't let her out. It's unclear how long she was locked in the bathroom, but it has been reported that she has tested for the virus, and that test was that she did not have it. Yeah. Well, if she was locked in the bathroom by her husband, she could turn the tables on him and just simply hoard all the toilet paper. Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department has advised people, particularly older adults, to avoid cruise ships and air travel during the coronavirus onslaught. But some travelers just can't be dissuaded. Take, for example, Ben Stultz, a sophomore at Florida State University who will head out on a cruise to Mexico for spring break. He's hoping to, quote, hit the sweet spot, get there and get home before the virus takes hold in Mexico. To be safe, however, he's bringing along a respirator face mask and a deck of cards in case, you know, quarantine. Okay. The Daily Beast asked Stultz if he thought his plan was a sound one, to which he replied, honestly, no. Ah, yes. This reminds me of a classic film that I saw as a kid.
This is a ship of fools. I'm a fool. And you'll meet more fools as we go along. This tub is packed with them.
There are many stories here, but there is only one ship of fools.
Actually, I'm guessing there are many, if any of them are still floating around. What if COVID-19 goes truly pandemic and kills a lot of people? Well, Britain's National Association of Funeral Directors is ready. NAFD is in a dialogue with the government and local authorities to seek early guidance on steps funeral directors may need to take in the event of a ban on public gatherings, such as, well, funerals. If that happens, one option would be virtual funerals online, as many crematoria now have these facilities. Yep, nothing brings people together like a contagious funeral. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, if the world is filled with gullible people and you add a pandemic to the equation, then it's going to bring out snake oil salesmen from everywhere. And the snakiest of snake oil salesmen, who has spent a generation as the slimiest of con artists, is, of course, televangelist Jim Baker. He's been selling something on his show called Silver Solution. Here, he's chatting with a doctor, and I'm using air quotes when I mention doctor, about the merits of this product.
This is amazing. Would you recommend, as a doctor, people to have silver in their house for
never
a pandemic?
You never want to be without silver.
Never.
For so many reasons. Never.
Never.
You know, this is a staple.
Yes, it is a staple.
This is a staple for your family.
Yes.
And we can talk more about it. Maybe when we have more time.
Yeah, we got time.
All I can say is that it has been proven by the government that it has the ability to kill every pathogen it has ever been tested on, including SARS and HIV, which you may or may not want to get into as a part of this concern with this virus. And it can kill any of these known viruses like SARS. It has been tested on SARS. It has been tested on the bird flu, the H5N1. Right. And it is a 99% kill within 12 hours of exposure to the silver.
Well, two state attorneys general and the Food and Drug Administration are cracking down on disgraced televangelist Jim Baker. The New York Attorney General's office on March the 3rd sent a cease and desist order to Baker, and on March the 10th, the Missouri Attorney General's office filed suit against him as well. On February 12th, the Washington Post reported Baker asked a guest on his show whether the gel could cure the coronavirus. The guest, as you just heard, the aptly named Dr. Cheryl Selman, said, "It hasn't been tested on this strain of the coronavirus, but it has been tested on other strains of the coronavirus and has been able to eliminate it within 12 hours. In the letter, the extremely concerned Lisa Landau, chief of the Attorney General's Health Care Bureau, called the segment false advertising and said it violates New York law. She gave Baker 10 days to comply. You know, part of me wishes he and his whole show would completely disappear, and there's also a little part of me that I'm hoping he will not comply. I mean, I'd like to see the authorities rain down on him again. Don't forget, in his previous fraud conviction back in 1989, Baker was sentenced to 45 years in prison before having his sentence reduced to 8 years and ended up serving almost 5 years behind bars. I think this is one show that we all deserve a sequel to. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Tim Winders and his wife are living the life many people dream as they roll down the highway in their 39-foot RV that they've named Theo that serves as their home and office. In addition to living on the open road, Tim is the host of the Seek, Go, Create podcast and is finishing his first novel. He and his wife have enjoyed the nomadic lifestyle in New Zealand, Australia, and all over North America. Right now, he's in Colorado Springs, which is where we have caught up to him via Skype. Hi, Tim.
Hello, how are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So when did you and your wife make this decision to basically cast society away and decide to go out on the open road together?
Well, it's actually been a bit of a process. These type things are usually a journey. In 2013, we were somewhat forced out of the home we were living in because of financial situations. And so we became nomads then. And at that point, we began just traveling. We actually were living out of a Honda van, of all things. It had about 300,000 miles on it. And we began house sitting, which sounds interesting or sounds kind of odd, but it really is a great deal of fun because we would stay in other people's homes and watch them and watch their pets. And we did that all over North America. We did it in Australia. We did it in New Zealand. And we did that for a few years. And then we settled for a short period of time in the mountains of Colorado. We actually went to a Bible school there for a few years. And then when we finished that up, we said, you know what? We really love traveling, really love the nomadic life. Let's do it again. And my wife said, why don't we get an RV? And I kind of said, I don't even know how to spell RV. What do you mean get an RV? So that's how we came to be in an RV.
And how did it get the name, or why did you give it the name Theo?
You know, it actually has a spiritual significance. Theopolis is actually a name for friend of God. And so we actually just use the name Theo, and we kind of travel around and we do our business and we do some ministry. And so that's where it came up with the name Theo.
You say you do your business. What exactly is your business these days?
Yeah, I'm actually a business coach. I coach and help leaders and business owners and also people that are heads of ministries, and we help them grow and help them prosper in all that they're doing. So I actually do my business coaching from my RV and travel, and so that is actually my line of work, my business, my profession.
And before that, what was your line of work? When you were, stuck to terra firma, as it were, what was your line of work at the time?
Peter, we actually had three companies leading into the downturn of 2008. We had a real estate and asset holding company where we held over 100 pieces of real estate. At the time, it was valued at over $15 million. We also had a coaching business that was primarily for real estate investors and a lead generation business. So we had three businesses that they would have been seven-figure businesses. They were all real estate related, and the downturn of 2008 really hit them hard. And so I guess entrepreneur, business owner is what I've always done. I've always kind of coached and trained and loved that line of work. But those are the companies that we had prior to moving around. And, when you own a lot of real estate, you're somewhat planted. And so I tell people that we never would have become the nomads that we were if we hadn't gone through that very difficult time. So there is a silver lining many times in challenges that we go through.
Now, you've had many entrepreneurial types of businesses. Obviously, you've had some stumbles, but you have managed to get up and do different things. What is it about you that you feel you can be successful, even with some of the major pitfalls that you've had along the way? You can be successful in different things, for instance.
Yeah, I don't know, hard-headed, tough to learn lessons. I don't know. There's so many things we could look at it. I believe that life is all about a journey, and that we go through process, we go through systems. I'm actually originally a systems engineer from Georgia Tech in Atlanta. And I guess I've always had this mindset that I like to try new things. I like to do things, I think, which is somewhat of a definition of an entrepreneur. They enjoy risk. And so with that comes maybe a higher percentage for what the world would call failure. Maybe we just have a difficult time defining success. I think success to many of those that are like us are just the process of doing new things, trying new things. Oh, something didn't work so well. Let's try something else. You know what? Let's learn from what we did and maybe apply it to this new thing. We didn't do very well in this arena. Let's do podcasting. Let's write a book. Let's do some coaching. So I think it's just, and I think really most people have it. I don't think it's unique to me or really just a small group of people. I think everyone goes through challenges. And I think when they do, I think that's just the nature of humans. They will possibly wallow in that for a little while, but then eventually they will move on, and hopefully those wounds will heal up and they'll go on to whatever the next thing is.
Between you and your wife, which one is the more adventurous? In other words, did one of you or at different times have to kind of lead or coax the other in the direction you were going?
Oh, man, now you're getting into husband-wife relationship. That's tough questions there, Peter. You know, I'm going to have to kind of delicately answer this. No, you know, I think it's interesting. And you know, this kind of goes back to the question you asked earlier. We've had some very successful times during our life, lived in very nice resort communities. And then we've had some very challenging times, as we've talked about. And it's always interesting, this kind of relates to the question, but it's a little bit longer answer. You know, there are probably times that one of us kind of felt pretty deflated and, I don't know, wanted to give up or whatever, but we never did it at the same time. It was like one of us still had hope and life left in them. The other one was like going, boy, I'm fatigued and exhausted. So we never did it at the same time. And on the flip side, we're somewhat the same way when it comes to adventure and stretching. And, you know, I was one when, you know, we were going through the process of back in 2013, I said, you know what, we just need to put our stuff away or get rid of everything we own and jump in the van and we'll just see what kind of doors are opened up for us and see what God does for us. And then, you know, just a few years ago, actually about a year and a half ago, it was my wife that said, I think we should travel again now that we're, you know, finishing up our schooling here in the mountains of Colorado. And she said, I really believe we're supposed to get an RV. And I'm the one that kind of scratched my head and said, RV? I don't know anything about RV. So, you know, just like any relationship, it's an ebb and flow. It's give and take. And fortunately, she picks me up when I need it. And I'm hopeful that I pick her up when she needs it.
When you were still doing your businesses and you were in one particular location, where was home for you? And now that you're in the RV, do you have a home base that you go back to, or are you always on the road?
Oh, that's a great question, and that's one that we get often. We do not have, and in this culture we're in, and I can almost use the word cult, but that's not a positive word necessarily, there are a number of people that do what we do. And the question that people ask is, do you have a sticks and bricks home somewhere, or are you fully mobile, full-time RVing, full-time traveling? We would be in the category of full-time traveling. We do not have a permanent location that we can go back to and park this 39-foot, you know, RV that we call Theo. We are constantly traveling. Now, we don't travel every day. We stay in some places for 30, 60, 90 days. And so we do plant for periods of time to kind of live in that environment. But we grew up in Georgia. We're both from the Atlanta metro area. And when we were running our businesses, we had moved outside of the Atlanta area to it's an area in the Lake Oconee area. It's about halfway between Atlanta and Augusta. So we're Georgia born and bred, and we both lived there till we were roughly 50 years old. And so we have been traveling since then, and we have no home.
And with all the traveling you've done, I mentioned New Zealand, Australia, all over North America, do you have a favorite spot?
You know, yes, there is one favorite spot that is what we like to call, there's a term we use, it kind of has a old church hymnal reference, and that is a How Great Thou Art experience. There's a lot of beautiful places all over the world, but there's some places that when you walk up, it's like take your breath away, how great thou art, and it just kind of rings in your ears. There was a place we drove down 30 miles on a gravel road in the middle of the South Island of New Zealand, and the actual name of it is Mount Sunday, and it is a big valley that's about 10 miles long, 2 to 3 miles wide. There's a 1,000-foot hill right in the middle of it. And around this entire valley, there's snow-capped white mountains. And that Mount Sunday, some people may know it because Peter Jackson actually used that location for the area of Rohan in the Lord of the Rings movies. And it was the physical location that he used. And it is one of the most stunning, off-the-beaten-path beautiful places that anyone can ever get to, and is also one of the hardest places that most people would ever get to. So that would be number one. There's a lot of number twos, but that would probably be number one for me.
Tim, you're living the life. I got one more question I want to ask. I've got about a minute to go, so I have to ask about your website, or not your website, rather, your podcast, Seek, Go, Create. What is it about, and how often do you do it?
Yeah, Seek, Go, Create. We drop a new episode every Monday. Of course, it's free. It's a podcast for those people that are podcast listeners. We share topics, stories, and interviews that nourish the spirit, soul, and body, and hope to help individuals grow to be all they were created to be. I say that it's for leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs, people maybe in ministry, but it's really anybody that's just seeking excellence, moving towards success, creating something new. And it's just, you know, we interject the nomad life into it. It's just us sharing some of our experiences in business, ministry, and travel. And that's really what it's all about.
Tim, thank you very much for being on the program with us. Happy trails.
Thank you, Peter. I've really enjoyed it.
Tim Winders, the host of the Seek, Go, Create podcast, who along with his wife travels the open road in a 39-foot RV. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0552, and you'll find links to Tim's site, with links also to his podcast. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of the book Nevermind. Plus, we have another edition of Book Banter. Stuart Nullman will be dropping by. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, this is a quote from the Springfield Township, Ohio Fire Chief Dave Nangle. "There is nothing suspicious that we determined at the scene. But the fire was tough to fight because it was in a non-hydrant area of the city. The business was vacant," he said, "but it still had power. The chief declared the building a total loss." Would you like to know what the building housed before it was vacant? I'm sure you do. It used to house the Complete Fire Sprinkler and Safety Company, which had recently moved. Wow. If only someone had thought to put sprinklers in that building, huh? Yeah. And people in a bar in Porter, Indiana, called 911 to report a man had pulled a gun in the bar and was threatening people. His beef? The song choice someone made. It was karaoke night. He got up to go after the singer, but was so drunk he fell down and didn't reach them. That's when he pulled the gun. By the time police arrived at Leroy's Hot Stuff Bar, the man had been disarmed by his female cousin, who told officers that he was a Marine veteran suffering from PTSD and family issues. 34-year-old Jason Allen Huff, and I guess someone who has a short fuse, it's good that he's named Huff, was charged with intimidation with a deadly weapon, a felony, after being taken to a hospital which found his blood alcohol level to be at 0.38%. That's really pickled. As he was driven from the hospital to the jail for booking, Huff repeated over and over, "I'm a moron." Well, his cousin says Marine, he says moron. Either way, he wasn't so drunk that he couldn't put his finger on the real problem. You know, the one problem I have with this story is a bit of shoddy reporting. I've searched high and low to various reputable news sources, and nowhere could I find any information on exactly which song ticked him off. That's a piece of information that I think is vital to this story. So, I'm asking you, the audience of this very program, the Stuff File program, one very important question. Which bad song choice would make you pull a gun on karaoke night? Send your answers either via email, Twitter, or Facebook. Also on the Stuff File program Facebook fan page, you can see the full story and drop your comments there.
Incoming subspace signal.
And since I posted that story on the Facebook fan page, I've already received some comments. Bob Greer said the song that would make him do it is Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. Thomas Hona said Surfing Bird. And Jeffrey Dubay actually picked the song I was thinking of when I saw this story, and that is Achy Breaky Heart. I would also like to toss in another song, and that is I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston. And no, it's not because I don't like the song. I think it's a great song. The one problem with the song, though, is there are so many people who think they can sing that song, and they clearly can't. Anyway, you can still send in which song you would kill over on karaoke night. You can send it to me via email, Twitter, or Facebook. And again, go to the Stuff File program Facebook fan page, and you can see the full story, along, by the way, with his mugshot. There's always some goodness there in those mugshots. Moving right along, as hemp and related products like cannabis oil are becoming more and more accepted around the world, certain entrepreneurs are going to try to take advantage of all the new interests. One such entrepreneur in the UK might have been a little too ambitious with his cannabis oil business and not cautious enough about the 14 canisters of butane he was using to extract the oil. 36-year-old James Toogood of Bristol is charged with causing an explosion that destroyed two floors of an apartment building while he was allegedly making cannabis oil. Toogood was seen fleeing the burning building with his clothes on fire. Witnesses said Toogood was rolling around on the grass outside the building to put out his burning T-shirt. 14 butane canisters were found inside. Another woman who was in the building escaped the fire caused by the blast by jumping from an upper floor flat onto a trampoline. While Toogood does not deny producing cannabis oil, he said he was not doing so when the explosion happened. I guess his cannabis business has, you know, gone up in smoke. Someone cue Cheech and Chong.
When life begins to be one long and dangerous road, I take the toll and all my cares go up in smoke.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, firefighters were called to a farm near Bramham, Leeds in England on March the 7th to put out a fire in a large pig pen. At this particular farm, the pigs wear pedometers to prove that they're free range. But according to firefighters, one of those gadgets was the probable cause of the blaze. They theorized that one of the pigs ate one of the pedometers, then passed it in its excrement, sparking a fire in the pen's hay. The culprit was the copper in the battery reacting to the pig poo. No pigs were hurt in the fire. I'll bet during the fire, a lot of those pigs got their recommended amount of steps in, though.
That'll do, pig. That'll do.
And let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Kelly Brackenhoff is a mystery and children's author who has a new book out called Nevermind. She's also an American Sign Language interpreter. And within the story, you can learn 10 ASL signs. Kelly joins us via Skype from Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, this is a unique idea. Tell us how you came to write this book and your connection to the ASL world.
Sure. So
How I came to write the book, from the time I was in elementary school, my younger sister and I used to write illustrated homemade comic books about a dog and a cat, and I've always wanted to be an author. I wrote the words, she did the illustrations. It was kind of like Garfield meets Snoopy, and they were really, really bad, but I had to go into a field that actually made money when I graduated from college. And so I've been an American Sign Language interpreter now for over 30 years. I've met lots of deaf people, done lots of interesting things as an interpreter, and it's deaf culture has really become a part of who I am inside. But at the same time, I always had a dream of becoming an author someday. And so after years of writing and hard work, last year, my dream came true when I published 2 mystery novels and this Nevermind featuring Duke the Deaf Dog. It's called Nevermind because everyone in Duke's family can hear except him. And sometimes people tell him Nevermind, which he does not like.
Now, let's go back a little bit. What was your, first indoctrination into the world of ASL? When, what made you want to become an interpreter in the first place?
When I was in high school, I volunteered at a camp that had mostly deaf kids in it, and I didn't know anything except how to spell my name. And I became friends with them over a summer and started learning sign language and just kind of fell into the world and just wanted to keep learning. So I took classes in high school and in college. And at a certain point, the deaf friends and mentors that I had encouraged me to become an interpreter. And in college, I had majored in English, thinking I was going to rock the writing world. But those deaf people really kind of pulled me into their world and asked me to interpret. And I've been doing it, like I said, for a very long time. And I was able to work part-time while I raised my family. And it's the best job I can ever imagine. It's more than I would have ever thought it would be.
So getting back to your book, Nevermind, you decided to incorporate what you've learned as an ASL interpreter, you decided to incorporate that into your book. How did that whole thought process come about?
Sure. Well, once I decided to write a children's book, I wanted to make sure, that was like my dream was to write books. And I wanted to make sure that deaf children could also dream big too. More than 90% of children who are born deaf or hard of hearing have parents that can hear. And I've done a lot of research, and there's just very, very few books for young children that have deaf or hard of hearing characters in the books. And I wanted to write a book that deaf children could feel connected to, because I think every child can love reading if they find a story that they enjoy. So the Duke books are from the perspective about what it's like growing up with a hearing difference. And I just knew right away when I decided to write the book what I was going to write about, because I had worked with this woman named Chris Grassmeyer, and I heard her tell a story over and over about her experience as being a mom with a deaf son. And I asked her permission to tell the world about her house rule, and that was the seed of Nevermind. So the books don't stop with just a nice story about teaching children and adults that everyone wants to be included in conversations. Another thing that a lot of deaf and hard of hearing children are missing while they grow up is seeing deaf adults who have exciting jobs and are living their dreams. So I know lots of deaf people, and I asked a couple of them to help me make the books. And so one of my friends is a rock concert photographer. So he goes to heavy metal concerts and captures the artists in these really, really cool artistic photos. He even has an online concert magazine. So he took the photos for the book. And then another friend of mine is an American Sign Language instructor at the University of Nebraska. And she's like traveled the world, and she's a leader in the deaf community. So I wanted to incorporate this whole community of people that I've, been friends with for quite a while and make them part of the book, so that deaf children can not only see other people can understand what it's like to grow up deaf, but also deaf children can see hey, there's a lot of really cool deaf adults out there. There's really nothing that you can't do as a deaf child when you grow up. And I wanted them to be able to meet these people through the book.
Now, when you created the book, what made you decide to make it a deaf dog as opposed to a deaf little boy or little girl?
I think my sister had a hand in that because she's actually the illustrator. And I guess there must have been some part of our history together back when we were little, those dogs that she used to draw. And so when I brought the idea to her, she was the one who really, she has a lot of experience with dogs, and she's just really, really good at capturing the different expressions, the different personalities of the different breeds and stuff. And so she kind of had a hand in making that character Duke come alive. And a lot of the things that people love about the book is how each dog's personality just kind of shines right through the illustrations.
It must be very gratifying to have a passionate, fun thing to do as a child with your sister that you can still do as an adult. Working with your sister this way as an adult must be very, very gratifying for the two of you.
It is. It's funny. We just kind of went our separate ways with our careers. She's a very talented muralist, and she's done a lot of commissions for businesses and private homes in the Omaha, Nebraska area. So she's been working at her job doing that for quite a while, but I have only just recently become an author. So when we could put the two things together, it was so satisfying. Like, our parents, you know, used to tease us when we were little, and I don't know if they really teased us, but they'd say, oh, you're going to be an artist and you're going to be a writer. And then I think my mom and my dad are very, very proud to see that all these years later, what they thought, what they saw as a spark when we were little is actually coming true.
Now, you, I understand, have two dogs. Is that correct?
I do, yes. Go ahead.
Does Duke look like either one of your dogs?
Okay, this is kind of funny. I do have a dog. His name is Duke. He's a German wire hair pointer, so he looks nothing like Duke, the character. And I really was hesitant about giving the dog my name, the name of our dog, because he's a fictional character. But there's something about Duke the Deaf Dog that just kind of rolls off your tongue. So we just decided to keep it. But no, my dog doesn't really look like that. My sister actually did a lot of research about the different dog breeds. And there's... I'm trying to think. I think this dog is an English setter. She's probably going to tell me I'm wrong. But there's a very, very many of those dogs are actually deaf in real life. Like that breed of dog has a high percentage of deafness. And so a lot of the dogs that have two different color eyes or have blue eyes tend to be deaf. It's a genetic thing in the breed. And so she really authentically chose that as the breed to make Duke in the book.
Wow. Now, I understand also that there's other ASL material included. So what can people who are not deaf, what can they learn about ASL through this book?
Right. That's the super cool thing about this book. So everyone who buys the book gets access to videos that are on my website. So in the book itself, you can see little photos of Amy doing the 10 signs in the book. And then on my website, there's videos of her demonstrating how to do the signs on video, because, you know, a book is a flat 2D surface and it's kind of hard to tell which way your hands are supposed to move. So on the videos, you can see how she makes the 10 signs. And then she also explains some American Sign Language ideas, like the linguistics of it. And then she also signs the entire story from start to finish. So children and some classrooms that I've worked with and stuff, they can pull up the videos and watch them as many times as they like to learn how to sign the story and how to do the signs that are in the book. So I want to expose like a whole generation of kids to how it feels to grow up to be deaf. Maybe it will spark their interest in learning, ASL to communicate with their classmates or even future coworkers, because I don't really want anybody to be left out.
Excellent. Now, what is the age that your prime reading audience is for this book?
I think this is about like age 3 to about age 7, 8, 9, second grade, that area. So like preschool, where you're kind of with your parent reading together with a parent and then all the way up to about second grade.
So you're getting them very young. Do you have any anticipation of doing either a follow-up book for that particular age group, or books for groups of children who grow up with your book?
I have so many plans and so little time, but yes, we are already working on the next book. It's going to be coming out later this year. The name is Farts Make Noise.
Excellent.
It's about when Duke discovers things that he didn't know made noise can actually be heard by hearing people, and that some of those noises are not polite. So on one level, it's teaching a social skill, and then on a more adult level, it's recognizing that not everyone learns things the same way.
Well,
I have ideas, though, for probably 6 or 7 more books of this age group, but then if they're as popular as I think they'll be, I would definitely like to do more move up to like chapter books or older kid things.
Well, congratulations. The first book, the new book is out. It's Nevermind. Kelly, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kelly Brackenhoff, author of Nevermind. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0552, and you'll find links to Kelly's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is, once again, the man who is flushed with success, Stuart Nauman.
He at least doesn't go right down the drain.
There you go. There you go. How you doing, Stu?
Very good, Peter. Very good. It's good to be back for another edition of Book Banter. And speaking of, drains and, flush with success and all sorts of types of plumbing and pipes and all that, this is no pipe dream, Peter, because on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at a book called The Poop Diaries. Now, let me give a little preface about this, a little preamble, because Abby Ross, who wrote this book, in her Chicago home, she called a plumber late one evening to come to her home and unclog the toilet. And the plumber who answered the call not only fixed the problem within 30 minutes, but also shared with her many of the interesting and unusual stories that he experienced fixing all sorts of indoor and outdoor plumbing, which gave Ross the inspiration to compile this book called The Poop Diaries. Now, at first glance, the book's title could be somewhat misleading because it's like a first-time mother's experience with her firstborn child and all the diapers she had to change, or about the wonders of bowel movements in general. But however, Ross gives the rationale behind why she chose this title in particular for a book because you think the book's about poop, and rightfully so, but when people think about plumbers, they envision poop. It's simple as that. But In the plumbing trade, there's more to just cleaning poops out of pipes, let me tell you that. And in this book, Ross interviews 10 plumbers, in which each individual chapter focuses on a certain plumber and the many stories of their encounters with showers, baths, faucets, pipes, and toilets, and all types of contents they extracted from them, which are bookended with why and how they chose to become a plumber in the first place, and reflections on their job and how meaningful it really is to their customers and to their community. Now, the common denominator you get from reading these stories is this, that these hardworking plumbers enjoy what they're doing and are glad they got into this profession, no matter what they've stuck their hands into and pulled out, or the type of bizarre and difficult clients they have encountered. And there's quite a lot to choose from when you read this book. And a couple of my favorites in the Poop Diaries include a plumber named Todd, when he did a job to unclog a home sewer and found it was jammed with over 200 baby wipe sheets. He told the wife not to flush baby wipes down the toilet. So the wife replied that she doesn't have any kids. However, her husband had, and I quote, and I'm going to just like edit it, had an a-hole problem.
No, okay. I think the wife has an a-hole problem.
Oh, the EPA is going to hear about this one.
Yeah.
And then there's a heartwarming story told by Dean about the time he unclogged a sewer at a house that was being used as a free daycare facility for the neighborhood children, in which its owner gave him a home-baked sweet potato pie that she made while he was busy unclogging her sewer as a token of appreciation.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. You get those kind of nice, heartwarming stories.
Unless, of course, the pie gave him the runs, which would be ironic.
Well, if that was the case, well, he could have went to the toilet they just unclogged.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Now, The Poop Diaries I found to be an entertaining book that will give you a much deeper understanding and appreciation of plumbers and the literal dirty work that entails their job 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It shows that no matter how simple, difficult, or stomach-turning the repair job in question is, plumbers have the knowledge and skill that make them an essential, vital service, and thankfully helps to shatter the long-held stereotype of the slovenly plumber, you know, with the butt crack, with the pants. So if your apartment, house, or condo constantly has clean water running through the pipes and drains of your home in question trouble-free, you should hail your local plumber for always ensuring that your pipes and drains are always being maintained. Because, let's face it, they're the unsung heroes of home repair.
Now, she chronicles the stories of 10 plumbers in this book, right?
That's right.
She doesn't have them competing against each other in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Oh, that's
not
too,
at all.
That's too bad, because then, you know, she could call it, literally, the Super Bowl.
Well, she's going to, I mean, who wants to plunge into that category right now?
Now, as a promotional idea,
yeah,
maybe with each copy of the book she can give a complimentary roll of toilet paper, although I understand that's pretty hard to find these days.
Yeah, but you know what I was thinking of?
What?
Well, there's no shortage of plastic dog poop around.
That is true. Now, at this, so the name of the book is,
it's called The Poop Diaries. It's by Abby Ross. It's published by Black Rose Writing, and it's $18.95.
Now, for all the years we have been doing this segment on the show, I have always asked you, and what other books do you recommend in this genre? And you've never let me down. But I'm sitting here with bated breath wondering what you're going to come up with.
Well, I mean, if I thought of another poop book, I mean, I know there's a kid's book about poop. I know that. It's a classic. I forgot the title, but there is a classic book about poop. But I'm not going to recommend that one. But about working, I mean, about people on the job, there's an excellent book by late Stud Strickel called Just Plainly Working, which he wrote in 1975. And he interviewed a lot of people who did a lot of different jobs and, you know, what the joys were, the hazards were, if they were frustrated with it, if they hated the, you know, if it's their lifelong calling or if it's just something to make a few extra bucks. And the book was a huge bestseller and was also a little bit controversial because of the salty language that was used in it. But I think to play it safe, I do recommend Working by Studs Terkel.
Working by Studs Terkel. You know, I thought there was the off chance that you might have brought up a historical tome that chronicled the history of the Roman sewer system. You know?
Is there such a book?
Oh, there has to be one. You know, somebody has to have written that book.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
literally, the history of plumbing. One of my closest friends who has been on radio shows with me over the years is David Soroka, who is a plumber. And maybe he should write that book because I've been accused over the years of being anal retentive.
Right.
And I cannot hold a candle to David when it comes to how fastidious he is about what he does for a living. He will drive you nuts, which is why he's the best plumber in the world. But he will drive you nuts with how picky he is about the things he will do as a plumber to get the job done right.
I mean, are certain things that he will not extricate from a clogged drain? Is that that kind of thing?
No, that's not it. It's there are certain things when it comes to the quality of what he will use as far as materials are concerned. He will read you the riot act if you're one of those people who puts baby wipes in the toilet. It drives him nuts. So he is quite frankly the best plumber I've ever known.
Oh, maybe. Well, you know what? Abby Ross wants to do another Poop Diary. She wants to do a sequel, so she is welcoming other plumbers to contact her to for a second book. So, you know, maybe if your friend doesn't have the time, or he's up to his neck and you know what to write a book, maybe he should contact Abby.
That might be a good idea. Anyway, again, her book is called
The Poop Diaries, and it's by Abby Ross. It's published by Black Rose Writing, and it's only $18.95.
And when you finally come out of the bathroom, where can people find you?
Well, when at the reading room, as once affectionately referred to, well, you can find me on the pages of the Montreal Times. You can find me there, you know, in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Well, thank you, Peter. And now let me see what's clogging this drain over here. I hope it's not baby wipes, that's for sure.
Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about at a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you right here, right now. A young man and his girlfriend dining at a Western New York steakhouse earlier this month skipped dessert and asked for an ambulance instead. That's because when the bill arrived, the man inadvertently shot his girlfriend with a stolen gun while reaching for his wallet. Cheektowaga police allege that 19-year-old Anthony Cicerelli put his hand in his front pocket to pay the bill, and a pistol went off, shooting his girlfriend in the upper right thigh. The couple then left the restaurant and drove away to seek medical attention. They stopped at a plaza, and the woman called police for help. Officers arrived and placed a tourniquet on her injury. Cicerelli of Tonawanda was charged with first-degree reckless endangerment and criminal possession of a weapon. He's also facing criminal possession of stolen property. You know, there's only one way to get guys to cut down on gun violence, whether intentional or idiotic.
We get every woman in town to agree not to sleep with any man until they get rid of their guns.
Yep, that might work. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that time you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A Flagler County, Florida man was arrested after he told loss prevention officers he was a U.S. Marshal and flashed a fake badge in an attempt to shoplift groceries. 60-year-old Leroy Stottlemyre entered the grocery store at around 7 p.m. and tried to leave the store without paying for two boxes of potatoes and a grouper filet. When a loss prevention officer stopped Stottlemyre, he told the officer he did not need to pay for the items because he was a marshal. Stottlemyre then placed the groceries on the floor and walked out of the store. The officer followed Stottlemyre to his car, where he then flashed a gold badge in a black holder that said U.S. Marshal. Stottlemyre was located at his home by deputies and was arrested on charges of false imprisonment of a federal law enforcement officer, petty shoplifting, and resisting a merchant. During the investigation, deputies said they noted a case from 2019 where a deputy conducted a traffic stop on Stottlemyre's vehicle for failing to stop at a stop sign. According to a news release, Stottlemyre told the deputy that he was a federal air marshal. Now, why? Oh, why? Would you think that, even if you were actually a U.S. Marshal, that this would allow you to shoplift in a grocery store? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0552. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0552. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.